My name is Bob Brennan. I work with Integrated Manufacturing Systems. We provide mobile applications in the factory floor and the warehouse for a number of ERP applications. My role at IMS is all around networking and connectivity. The presentation, while not specifically a developer progress thing, is a side conversation or things you need to be considering and understanding about wireless networks. Now, one of the themes that's been going on all week is, boy, the hotel wireless is giving me problems. I'm going to show you why in a couple of minutes. Okay. So we're going to take a path through that. A couple of places we get kind of down in the weeds. Most of that's necessary to make a point for something else. If you bear with me for a couple of minutes, then hopefully we come out the other side a little better off. Okay? So I don't run over. Okay. So our agenda for the morning, talk a little bit about wireless, the history, some of the physics involved, because that's important. Takeaways, which are really kind of the pieces that most of the progress folks have, and then open it up for Q&A. I have a bunch of slides to get through, but if the point doesn't come across, stop me, we'll go through the conversation, and we'll work it out. Okay? So fundamentally, wireless network is provided by something called an access point. An access point is a radio, and it provides a bridge between your wired network and the wireless connections. Okay? Important thing that nobody really pays attention to, they are single-threaded and they run half duplex. Which basically means that one device can talk to an access point at a time, and it can either be sending or receiving, but it can't be doing both. Okay? It's kind of like an old school hub. Hopefully you see that's a bottleneck.
Yeah.
Right? The radio spectrum in the United States is controlled by the FCC. That's a pie chart, I know. Wireless runs in a couple of specific bands that are controlled. And so there's only so much, for regulation, there's only so much space that we can use to drive wireless radios. Okay, so part of the problem is that we have a limited amount of bandwidth, we have a limited amount of space, and we have a whole bunch of people trying to do a whole bunch of different things that don't all necessarily work well together. Okay, so there's part of the spectrum, these frequencies, that are set aside for general use. They call it the industrial, scientific, and medical, or ISM bands. Okay? If you look at any consumer-grade product that runs wirelessly or cordless, okay, it's going to fall in one of these groups. If you used to have things like cordless phones in your house, probably ran at 900 megahertz, then moved to 2.4 because 900 got crowded, and then they moved to 5 gigahertz, and every time they moved, characteristics changed about how well they worked and the fidelity and clarity. Okay? The two that we care about right now are the 2.4 gigahertz and the 5.7 gigahertz. Those are open worldwide and those are available for use for a variety of things. Okay? Any place that says worldwide means that it's wide open globally. Any place that it says subject to local acceptance means that there's some portion of the world where the government has said, no, you can't do that, you need a license. Okay? For any place that says worldwide, you can generate signals on any of those frequencies without a license. That's important. Okay? So a little bit of history of things. Back in 1997, there was the first draft of the 802 specification from the IEEE. The 802 specification has been kind of a roadmap on how to build wireless networks. Sorry. In 1999, the first adoption of the 802.11a and b specification came out. Now, for most of you, you're probably used to hearing about 802.11b. It was the first real widely available wireless standard. It ran at 11 megabits. It was built upon some proprietary networking technology that came out in 1997. 1997 time frame, you were really lucky to get 1 megabit a second. Every radio was proprietary in terms of their implementation of the standard. It was a mess. Okay? 802.11b was really the first time that we had consumer acceptance of a standard, and we went from 1 megabit to 11 megabits. Tenfold increase. Everybody was happy. Okay? Good times. What a lot of people don't know is at the same time, 802.11a launched. 802.11a had some technological differences in terms of how it provided speed that were really the roots of everything we're doing today. So that's an important milestone. Okay? And the problem was that 802.11b became a consumer-grade option that was highly accepted. So lots and lots of money went into lots and lots of radios getting put onto the market, and it churned and churned and churned. You couldn't buy a device that didn't have an 11b radio in it. You could not buy a device that had an 11a radio, especially in an industrial environment. Okay? So for my world and a couple of folks in here, Roger Wedge basically does similar sorts of things to our company. We're concerned with working in industrial settings, providing wireless connectivity in factories and warehouses and trailer trucks and a whole bunch of places. Okay? We couldn't buy devices that had 11A radios. So the consumer market drove a decision that technically was inferior to what else was available on the market. How many times has that happened?
Beta versus VHS.
Yeah, beta versus VHS, right? Stock market's full of stories about that sort of stuff. Okay. So just to give you a little bit of a kind of where we were to where we are. 802.11a and b. A was 11 megabits a second, ran at 2.4 gigahertz. Okay, 2.4 gigahertz is the primary ISM space used for stuff everywhere. Okay. It's crowded, it's ugly. It's actually really ugly in this hotel. 802.11b runs at 54 megabits, so 5 times faster, theoretically. Okay. And it runs at 5 gigahertz. Different technology, a whole bunch of different physics that we're going to get into. Okay. They are what's called single-in and single-out devices. It just means it's one radio. One stream comes in, one stream goes out. Real simple sort of stuff. Okay. We get down to the next big jump was 802.11g. That was 54 megabits at 2.4 gigahertz. It was backward compatible. So if you had a G radio in something, you could run G or B, and life was good. Okay, because it was a bridging point when people who had done B networks didn't put G in, so you could claim both. 802.11n, huge step forward. If you take one thing away from this talk, if your network at home isn't 802.11n, fix that. If your clients aren't 802.11n, fix that, because the leap in that technology is greater than all of the other things combined. Okay? That one goes up to 600 megabits a second. It can run in 2.4 or 5 gigahertz. And it has up to 4 radios. So it's called MIMO, multiple in, multiple out. So in parallel, you have 4 radios doing what one radio used to do. There's only so much room in the spectrum. So now we have, instead of one thing polluting the air, we now have 4 things polluting the air, all competing for the same limited amount of bandwidth. And the very new 802.11c was introduced in 2012, it just got ratified a couple of months ago, is another step forward, and it goes all the way up to, in theory, 3.2 gigabits a second. Huge, huge step from 11 megabits to 3.2. We'll come back. It uses MIMO and multiple in, multiple out, and it actually has a feature we'll talk about called multi-user MIMO, which actually works as a, like a multiplexer. Most everybody in the room probably remembers multiplexers. It's one of the advantages of working at a Progress conference, right? You have some depth of experience, right? Nobody at a hackathon knows what that is. Okay. So this is a concept called multipath. And multipath just means that if the signal travels from the transmitter to the receiver, most often it doesn't take a straight path. It bounces off of things, gets absorbed into things. Okay? Multipath is both a problem and an advantage. And I'll fill that in. But the concept of multipath is critical in terms of wireless networking. So a little physics. Interference. If we have multiple waves bouncing, a wave gets sent out, and some of it goes straight and some of it bounces off the wall. At some point it merges. Okay? And it can merge kind of in three ways. If it's in phase, meaning the crests and the troughs arrive exactly the same, it means I have higher highs and lower lows, but everything's in sync. It's a really rare occurrence. If it's out of phase, the crest of one wave and the trough of the other wave hit, and you end up with a flat line. Okay? If you are using a wireless device, and all of a sudden you have no signal, sorry, that's what just happened to you. More often than not, you have different waves. So instead of having this nice, clean sine wave, you end up with this jagged tooth sort of thing on the side. Okay? Nobody using wireless thinks about that. Right? But that's the critical piece about wireless, is that's the environment we're in all the time. So from an engineering perspective, we need to figure out how to make that look like that. Okay? The different waves into an in-phase wave. So multipath distortion is basically the same way of saying if I'm transmitting on a frequency and I have an arc of data coming to you, and you're receiving and you're looking for a nice clean arc, and you get this jagged sort of thing, we need to put procedures in place to straighten that out. As you can see, there are places that reach back down to the zero line. Let's see if I can do this. Here, here, here. That means it's part of the signal not getting through. So remember when we started, I said that these are half duplex, one unit talking and receiving at the same time. Okay. When we used to use hubs, and you had a collision, and think of that as a collision. Okay. So it means I need it. So now instead of sending one time, I have to send twice. Maybe we get better fidelity, and I can match those things up and they start working. So from one going to one to one transmit receive, one transmit antenna talking to two. I'd said earlier, if you're not at N, get to N. The reason I want you to get to N is it takes advantage of the ability to have more than one receiving path. So if I can send that same signal to two antennas that are physically separated from one another on an access point, the wavelengths we're talking about are inches in size. The 2.4 gigahertz, we're doing several thousand of those every second. Okay? So if I can move the antenna more than a wavelength apart, now I've got two copies that are coming in that have different distortion patterns, but if I overlay them, get better throughput. Okay. So before we got to N, that process was called diversity. Okay. After N, I can have multiple radios talking to multiple radios on the other side and do all of that matching up. So this is just before N, single to single, after N, multiple to multiple. Without doing anything else, we've added a whole bunch of bandwidth. Okay. So let's just walk through a couple of the standards first. Right. 802.11b, maximum data rate of 11 megabits a second. It was a follow-on to something called spread spectrum. and frequency hopping, and those were methods of trying to get data out to people. It was kind of like a round robin sort of approach. They were really ineffective, but they were state of the art at the time. They failed for a whole bunch of reasons. The important bit is that one radio using 2.4 gigahertz. That was the start of getting into the ISM band. At the same time, the key takeaway from A is this thing called orthogonal frequency division multiplexing. A whole bunch of math goes into it. Basically means that we can take a signal on a channel, break that channel into chunks, send the chunks independent of one another, and recombine them at the receiving station. Okay? If there's one big thing from the early days, that's it. Because everything else that we do rides on that technology. Okay. 802.11g, we ended up with 54 megabits running both on 2.4 and 5 gigahertz. On 2.4 gigahertz, it used ODFM, therefore we now have the best signal going across the best networking or frequency. When we get to N, we have multiple input, multiple output, multiple radios going. Okay? Now, it's both bands, that's great, it's also backward compatible. When we get down to channel widths, the wider the channel, the more I can put on it. The wider the channel, the more interference I'm creating. Okay? One of the things as you get into N, you have multiple radios. One of the things that we like to do in an industrial setting is run the access points over a technology called power over Ethernet, which just basically means we put Ethernet up to the access point, and there's an adapter that goes into the wall, and we drive power over the four wires in the Ethernet that aren't used for telecom. Okay. Well, that becomes problematic because we only have so much power that we can put on those tiny little wires. So a lot of vendors are doing special things. So now we're going from standard to, once in a while, we're seeing non-standard sorts of stuff. Okay. So that's going to be a continuing problem moving forward. It's kind of a picture of the history. Okay? We start back here with A and G. It's a single little pipe. And then as we get to the N radio, we're able to take two pipes and tie them together. Now, with multi-user, we can do two radios, three radios, or four radios. So everybody that talks about we have higher throughput in N, all that means is we're using more radios to do the same amount of work. The problem with that is that in order to use multiple radios, you have to have multiple radios on both sides. Okay? Multiple radios on both sides means two antennas per radio. Haven't found an iPad yet that has eight antennas sticking out of it. Okay. So theoretically in the lab, a whole bunch of stuff works. AC is the brand new animal. It's the newest standard. It uses multi-user MIMO. It is up to eight streams, so eight radios. Okay. That means that you need something that has 16 antenna on it to take full advantage of. It is only running in 5 gigahertz. So the noise at 2.4 got so bad, it moved on to 5 gigahertz. Has multiple channel widths. All cool stuff. If you're in a pure environment, if you're not in a pure environment, problematic. Huge leap in speed, 866 megabits a second. Again, we have the power over Ethernet. To get that 866 megabits a second in a lab, you can't be more than 10 meters away from the access point. Okay?
33 feet.
Line of sight. So, for everybody that's used to having a access point in your conference room that's going to drive wireless signal all over the all over the top floor of the office space. Big problem. So all the hardware vendors are saying, this is pretty good. We sell more hardware. I look at it as a person that sells that sort of stuff going, we've conditioned the buying public to say 30,000 feet in access point covers in the warehouse, like it's good. Not so much anymore. So in my estimation, it's brand new. There's a whole bunch of radio vendors that have that kind of equipment out. There isn't a single, as far as I know, there isn't a single consumer device, okay, that has an AC radio in it yet. When Apple decides that they're going to put an AC radio in probably the next iPhone, the whole thing will shift. Right. How they handle everybody asking for smaller and smaller and thinner and easier to use and iPads and iPhones, how they handle getting that number of antenna in, wizardry. Beyond AC, the next big thing, AD coming up. It uses 60 gigahertz. 60 gigahertz, really, really, really fast frequency. And by design, it's going to be tri-band. So it'll be 60 gigahertz, 5 gigahertz, and 2.4 gigahertz. Okay. Ultimately, once that transition, we can get all the old stuff out of the queue, everything will probably move to 60 gigahertz. Okay. That's up to 70 gigabits per second in the first draft. It's very efficient using power. So a lot of the problems that are coming in with the newer APs, it is getting close to being a wire-like replacement. Okay? And there's a lot of headroom between what the spec says now. It just started. So over the next 3, 4, 5 years, you'll see this build out to completion. To use all of that means all new infrastructure. As a customer, people aren't really interested in that. As a seller, I'm kind of interested in that, right? But the concept of the first wave of these things coming out, probably going to be middle to end of next year. The first time you see somebody coming out and staking the claim saying I'm the first AD sort of guy. There's nothing beyond this on the drawing board right now. Okay, so physics. In the 2.4 gigahertz range, there's 22 megahertz channels. In the United States, there are 11 channels. So the bandwidth that we have is broken down into 11 channels, each of them being 22 megahertz. Each one of those channels is something that we can put data onto. So when before I showed you the arc, that's what it is. We have 11 of them. In theory, you want to use channels that don't overlap with one another so that you have the best possible throughput. So in the United States, if you do a professionally installed network, chances are you'll see access points on channel 1, 6, and 11 because there's a little bit of room in between each one of those and they don't interfere. You don't have crosstalk on the channels. Okay. You use 1, 6, and 11 because it's the only place that you can have three channels wide. Yes.
So does that mean you have an access point at 1, next access point is 6, next access point is 11, then 1, 6, 11?
Yeah. And it goes in three dimensions. Okay. So if I have a multi-user 4,
right,
not only do I have to look on the horizontal plane, I need to look on the vertical plane as well. Okay. So it's interesting when you walk into a business and then Joe, the IT guy, scattered access points just kind of willy-nilly. And complaints that we have lousy performance. Chances are the lousy performance is based on interference. And the number one form of interference in a wireless network is other wireless devices. So a few years ago, none of you had smartphones. A couple of you probably had Bluetooth headsets, a few things that use that same speed or same band. When all of you walk into this room, okay, and you all have your phones and they're all searching for networks, just because you aren't associated doesn't mean that the chatter doesn't stop. So you're your own worst enemy, collectively, in using the bandwidth that we have. Okay? I don't mean DCF, but Wouldn't it be great if everybody shut their thing off and I did my thing? And I shut mine off and do your thing and you do your thing, right? So you can round them. It's not reasonable. That's actually what some of the newer techniques are getting, time slicing at very rapid rates and polling connections and disconnections. Okay? But we'll get there. So we're not alone in 2.4. Here are just some of the things that you typically see. Okay, Wi-Fi, wireless, we have competing networks. Right? You come to an event like this, you have the hotels network. And then historically, up until this year, as part of the committee, we put in our own network, right? SpyNet. And then some of the vendors downstairs put in networks, just to be able to do their own thing. And then we have people walking around with their little MiFi devices that connect Wi-Fi to their cell phone. Okay? And then we have, in my case, or in your case, Bluetooth, anything Bluetooth, runs in 2.4. Zigbee, which are industrial devices, maybe some of you've heard of, maybe not. Now, microwave ovens, okay? Cordless phones, baby monitors, and wireless video projectors. As I was preparing yesterday, our friends from Data PA downstairs. Anybody from Data PA here? It was interesting. Data PA have, sitting on their desk, a wireless projector, so from a laptop, they're beaming a picture up onto the wall, right? So instead of bringing out the whole thing. Very cool. Runs in 2.4 gigahertz. They are from the UK. In the UK, you can use up to 14 channels. They are using channel 14. Perfectly fine if you're in the UK. If you're not in the UK, one is half of that's going beyond and half of it's coming back in. So any of the hotel access points that are put on channel 11, getting completely wiped out by that thing. Microwave ovens is a funny one. Invariably, we work in factories. Factories are typically owner-operated sort of places, not big conglomerates. Invariably, the owner of the company redoes the kitchen every 10 years. And as a benefit, they take out their old microwave and they bring it to the employee lounge so that people can pop popcorn and eat their dinner up. And then the owner gets his new fancy gig. The older those are, the worse the seals are. So that when you turn one on, it pollutes the entire 2.4 gigahertz spectrum instantly and immediately, which means that if you're doing anything with a constant connection, like telnet, okay, you're gone. So if you have those sorts of problems, think about maybe that old radar range that you brought in isn't quite what you want.
How many other places like that would do that?
Microwave ovens do that. Ultraviolet paint drying equipment that's not properly shielded will do that. Those are the two really, really big ones. Anything that can produce that lives in that spectrum. So a baby monitor that's not shielded correctly will do that. Mostly Bluetooth and stuff is too small of a power, but if you've got a lot of Bluetooth, like you have a Bluetooth charging station for a whole bunch of devices sitting there, and they're all looking for their connection in and around that, you're going to have that. It's all shared, right? So that look of disgust that you have is that's it. That's what I live with every day. Yeah.
Can you, like, if I'm running the Wi-Fi analyzer on my phone, can you see the microwave oven and stuff? Will that show in, like, a Wi-Fi analyzer?
Someone. Depends on the analyzer. Some will pick up non-name sorts of things. But the problem with the microwave is it comes on and it goes off. It's not a steady state, right? So you have to be looking at it, right? Same with like an ultraviolet paint drying. And the only reason I'm harping on that is we chased our tail for months. And it wasn't until we were done walking out one day going, I had no idea. And there was a guy who literally hit deep into a machine and had all of the protective stuff off of it. It wasn't running, but they were working on it. Every once in a while they'd cycle it. And every time they cycled it, all hell broke loose. Why? So 2.4 versus 5. The energy being the same, right? So the amount of power coming out of the radio, a 2.4 gigahertz signal will go roughly twice as far as 5 gigahertz signal. Therefore, when you're doing 5 gigahertz network, you need twice as many access points, roughly. Buying decision, If I told you, you can have a system that has six access points, that $500 a piece, or 12 access points at $500 a piece, where do most people land?
Six
access points. So because it was popular and because it was cheaper, that is. So there's more of a crowd kind of forming there. Just so you understand the difference, 2.4 is crowded. Wavelength for that is about 4.9 inches. Right? And therefore the 5 gigahertz. 5 gigahertz is actually tougher to penetrate things. So a 2.4 gigahertz signal will go through a brick wall about like it's not there. They'll reflect off of metal, as you'd expect. Wallpaper and anything that's not metallic, 2.4 will go pretty much through. The longer the wavelength, right, the more drive it has. So now when we start going, we're going to 5 and then we're going to 60. Holy cow, 60 won't get out of this room. Like 60 won't get past you and me. Yeah?
What sort of range in your previous examples, like say a microwave,
a long way. and not a flip answer. It depends, because typically it's in an enclosed room, a break room, out in the back. That's where we see it. Right? So you'll have some shielding based on that, but not if it's wood and glass. The signal will go right through that. So you can take out pretty much an entire access point, depending on how close the access point is to the microwave. You can just destroy that path long enough that it takes everybody that's connected to that access point and knocks them off. Okay?
Is there a way to fix that?
I've offered customers, I'll buy you a new microwave. Because my multi-$1,000 installation is going to be corrupted by your $29 junk microwave. No one's actually said yes. Yeah. They're just, okay, we'll fix that. So, let's see if this is still running. Ah, it is. This is a tool that I use. It's called Insider. Now, Insider takes a network, and as you can see up in this section, we have all of the networks that you can see that are available if I were connecting from here. So these are all the access points, named or unnamed. And by unnamed, it just means somebody's not broadcasting their network name. Okay? But they are access points. And as you can see down on the bottom, this is all the competition. Can you guys see that in the back? Let's see if I can. I can't move it up any further, sorry. When we pick a network, one, notice that we're in a nice hotel, okay? We have a whole bunch on channel one. We're in the United States, that's good. We have a bunch on 4 and 5, that's not good. We have 6. That's good. We have 9. That's not good. We have 11. That's good. We have our friends from Data PA on 13 today. That's okay, unless we're trying to talk on 11. Okay. So one of the issues you can see is when people are complaining about the network here, it's pretty easy to tell why. We're not playing well with one another. Right? And it's not our fault, it's the infrastructure. Right? I would expect to see every one of the access points that says Westford Regency guests Wi-Fi, right, on 1, 6, or 11, they go through. That they're not tells me two things. Right? There are capabilities on some of the access points to be run by controllers, and controllers try and do this thing about the least congested channel. Cisco started this process a while ago. It's never worked. They say it works, but in application it doesn't work. You're far better off to put your access points on 1, 6, and 11 and let that spatial separation that we talked about happen as opposed to trying to let the equipment through. Okay? So it's really messy out there. So when everybody's complaining, there's a reason they're complaining.
What are the ones that go beyond 13?
Oh, sorry. So I'm actually looking at two bands. I'm looking at the 2.4 and I'm looking at the 5.
Okay.
So when you get from here down, those are the 5 gigahertz band.
The 5 has a ton more channels.
It does. And one of the things is we got, if you remember when we were talking about the starting point for 802.11n, that it had both 20 and 40 megahertz channel widths. So one of the things that you can do at 5 gig is you can actually use more space. It's less crowded, so you can do more with less. That will hold true up until we have more and more N-level devices on both sides. Right? So that's actually a good place to be. By default, if you have an N radio, it's going to try and connect to 5 gigahertz through here because it's least congested.
All right, so let's get back to the...
It's called Insider, I-N-S-S-I-D-E-R. Okay. So this concept that's come out now in N called beamforming. And beamforming is a way of steering in-phase signal from an access point to where you are. Okay. And if you think about it, everybody do physics in high school where you had the water table and the two things banging on the water table and you made the ripples and you had to figure out where they intersected and all that. Is that a familiar concept to everybody? Okay. Same thing here. Okay. So beamforming. Beamforming is going to be an ability to take two signals that are going on, okay? And if in the union of those spheres, I end up with constructive waves are going to come out in the radian from where we are, and destructive waves are also going to come out in the radian. And that's based on the phase that both cameras are in the water. So if I want to move the radian, I change the phase. Okay. So if I change the phase, it moves what was constructed from here to there. Okay. If I know where you are, I ought to be able to change that phase fast enough to find you. Okay. So now you're working on a constructive signal as opposed to a destructive one. I have a really cool tool to visualize that. If you have enough time at the end, I'll show it to you because it has a bunch of things around wave construction. So the next concept is a spatial stream. Basically means that each radio shoots out a collection of data. Okay? And this is how an N radio talks to a non-N client. It means that if I have multiple radios on the N side, I take the exact same data feed and I send it out in parallel, realizing that each signal is going to find its way to the receiver a different way. Okay, some's going to bounce, some's not, some's going to go direct, some's never going to get there. Okay. And on the client side, it rebuilds those streams. So it's one beam coming out multiple times, getting received and interpreted. Okay, so that's N talking to a non-N client. If we are end-to-end, we do something called spatial multiplexing. Spatial multiplexing was very cool for me. I have a degree in computer science and mathematics. And I spent a huge amount of time, I don't know why, until now, doing linear algebra. Greg's our math guy, right? And matrices, and inversions of matrices, and just all of this stuff. And like any kid, when the heck am I ever going to use this again? I found it.
What happens is each of the radios transmits a different stream of data, and it gets received by all of the antenna on the other side. So there's an encoding and decoding side to each radio. So I take a stream of data from one access point, or one radio, and I send it out, and it gets received on all, in this case, four radios on the other side. I take a completely separate stream of data and send it. And what happens on the receiving side is you get the combination of both of those waves. The decoder then comes through and says, basically creates a template, like an inversion template, that says erase or discard or ignore anything that's not the first stream. But keep all that data, because one of the other radios might need it to fill in a hole. So what happens is you end up with, in parallel, potentially four times the throughput that you did on the pre-end sort of stop. An interesting phenomenon is the noisier it is, or the more reflection and refraction there is in the environment, the better this works. Okay, it's counterintuitive. But the more stuff that's in the way, the better this works. So the worse the environment, the better the throughput. For a guy that works in a factory with all kinds of metal and all kinds of product and everything, wow, very cool. Okay? And I have all of the paperwork if you want to kind of go through the map later on over a beer or the soda or something. It's very cool, very cool. Okay. So let's talk about how signal gets sent. Something called an omnidirectional antenna. Put an antenna down, and I create a balloon of coverage. Okay? Versus a directional antenna. Directional antenna takes that same amount of energy, and instead of spreading it everywhere, focuses it where you're going. So a balloon versus a lighthouse. Okay? It's kind of a graphical representation of the two. Remember that the antenna is only powered by the same amount of energy. So no matter what, you can't change the amount of energy in the equation. By adding direction, you can get a signal to go farther. So one of the unintended consequences of having a directional antenna is that I can beam it to somebody, and wherever they are and kind of generally around, you'll get some signal. You have a lot of signal, actually. You'll get more signal than you would in an omnidirectional. If we said that the bulk of the interference comes from other wireless devices in the area, if I avoid shooting a signal at you, you can't interfere with me. So if I were able to take and just put a signal on this quarter of the room, you guys can do whatever you want. You won't bother us. And then when we move the signal over here, you can do whatever you want. You're not going to bother. You're not going to get any attention, right? But you're not also not bothering anyone here. Well, now if I can go from a quarter of the room to a single point by adding gain, we can get closer to one-on-one connections. So, yes?
If I'm doing my transmitter, I got directional. That's great for sending stuff to your laptop. But if your laptop doesn't have directional, how do you get the transmit back?
Okay. So there's a lot of layers in this stupid cake. Okay. So just that concept of adding gain to something is important. And gain just basically means focus. Okay. So to visualize it a little bit, if I have an omnidirectional antenna, I create a balloon of coverage. This is actually what it looks like. Okay? And right where the antenna is, there's absolutely no coverage. It just radiates out and blows up. So I get a kick out of all of the time, Roger, you must have seen this, where an IT person who doesn't know a lot about wireless is just fit to be tied because they're standing right under the access point and I'm not connected to it. Because there's no signal there. Okay? So when we build networks, we have overlapping coverage so that we avoid those sorts of things. Right? Just know. So
how far away?
not a, so it's a function of the antenna and how far away it is. Shouldn't be that big of a deal. Like the wavelengths we're talking about are less than 5 inches, so if they move 3 feet, it's a whole bunch of waves. As we add gain to an omnidirectional antenna, what happens is it flattens out and goes a little bit longer. So as it's higher gain omnidirectional antennas, it works out pretty good. Okay. So, as a mobility developer, right, throwing all this stuff back, what the hell does anybody at the progress conference care about any of this other than it's important to know why things work and don't work, right? As a developer, what can you count on for coverage and speed? How many people remember when coding for disk space and memory were important? I love these things, right? Well, now the thing that's important is, how do you program with the idea for kind of the least common denominator? You have miles of connectivity. Because mobility's really taken on a couple of forms, right? One is, I want to run wireless in my conference room. People are going to be transient coming in and out. That's one thing. You have control over that. One of the other forms of mobility is I'm going to put my application on a phone or a tablet and send those people off into the wild. No control over that. But for a great user experience, you want to code for the fact that networks are going to drop, transactions may or may not get processed, you may need to work something locally. A whole different mindset than, you know, for each customer, whole big different thing. So your design patterns should be around disconnected and ultra-slow networks. So that means that when you come into an application, you have a browser full of stuff. And how much stuff are you pre-populating? Hopefully not a lot. Hopefully let the user tell the system and do paging and those sorts of things. Now, one of the really good descriptions of all that, there's a fairly well-known guy, Peter Van Dam, I think probably a lot of people know, did web client framework. Progress has this cool web client where you can run the GUI kind of off remotely. And a lot of the design decisions that they put into that tool really fit here. Because they were working on, you had no idea in a wired network at that time what connectivity was. So he used to talk to me about, at the time on a cell phone, it was 56K. So they ran their application out literally in the fields and farms in the Netherlands. And so their test platform was 56K. I think that's still a pretty good barometer. Right? If you can run something that's acceptable at that point at speed, it'll work like magic, and you can faster than that. If you design everything for gigabit kinds of speeds, and you don't have gigabits, you have angry people. So great design for no or low bandwidth applications. Right? You can control that. That's up to you. And there's a whole lot of chatter going on around best practices and all of that. Security. If you are truly in a mobile environment where you're using outside iPads and stuff outside of the four walls of your facility, that's huge. Okay. The reason I brought that up to Phil Peed in the crowd the other day about best practices is we've done a lot of talking in the progress world about mobility over the past 2 years. And the tools that are being delivered, Tomcat and all that are being delivered, are developer editions that are wide open and full of debugging, enabled things turned on and logging and no security and whatever. I'm a 14 young guy, or I used to be. I don't know the first thing about Tomcat or that security or how to get all those multiple layers talking to one another. I need help. I'm pretty sure that I'm not alone in that. Okay? So if you want to join the course, help. That's one of the big lacking bits in terms of what we're doing. Okay? You can control a network if it's inside your facility. You have no control over it if it's not. And there's is a thing to think about in your application. It's called network transitions. And, oh, perfect. Network transitions means taking a client that is in a wide area network and continuing to run when they are able to transition to a local area network, okay, seamlessly. And hold that thought for a second. Things you can't control. The infrastructure of other places, you have no control over that. Try and run your application here. May or may not work. Depends on where you're standing and who's running what, and whether DataPA is doing a sales pitch or not. I don't mean to pick on them, it's the obvious thing. I'll pick on Dan Foreman, he was in the middle of something yesterday. He turned on, while I was doing my testing, he turned on his Wi-Fi devices, like a whole bunch of stuff. He had no idea. Things you can't control, power consumption. Right? Every device, especially any battery-powered device that uses radios that are connected, burns power. Right? So there's a whole infrastructure in all of this, minimizing the amount of battery life you have. Well, if you have multiple radios, right? So you have a GPS on your phone, you have a Bluetooth radio on your phone, you have a local area network on your phone, and you have a wide area network on your phone, and you have four radios consuming power. Okay? You have some control over that as a developer to turn things on and off as necessary. More in an industrial sense than maybe in a home application, but that's a consideration, because if you become the bad citizen looking for a connection to something, you know, your mobile app is looking for GPS and you're in a building, you can burn through somebody's battery. There's a whole bunch of considerations around that. And data consumption. Especially wide area network data consumption. If everybody's paying AT&T by the megabyte, gigabyte, whatever it is these days, you want to be on the forefront of being a good citizen in that world and not creating applications that just churn data for the sake of churning data. It might be a whole different mentality compared to, I've got this GUI for .NET thing and we're going to flood it with everything so people can twist and, you know, pivot tables and all that. Not the right design pattern. Okay. So it's interesting. Apple has bought my wife a new MacBook Pro. It's an accessory now to buy a wired NIC interface for all of us. So we've gone from wireless being a nice to have and a benefit. And in the early days, it was an add-on. You needed a PCM CIA card to even get wireless on it. Right? It's the de facto standard. Everything's running wireless. It just takes the herd and moves it closer to, you know, more payoffs. Okay? Security is a huge deal. Interference is beyond your control. And you have no... You can create the greatest application in the world. If you deploy it in a certain part of New York City where there's 300 access points in one city block environment, it's not going to work. Okay. And I want to come back to, because we have a couple of minutes, but bridging the LAN to the LAN. All this explosion of mobile devices has led to the cell phone companies realizing, holy cow, there's a lot of infrastructure, a lot of expense put in to supporting data on a voice network. Okay. So they are working with IEEE on something called 802.11u. And in phone speak, it's called backhaul. Basically what they want to do is they want to take all of your data connections, if there is a possibility of offloading that, or backhauling that, to somebody else's network, they will pay to do that. So if you're on your cell phone and you walk into Starbucks, okay, and the infrastructure is 802.11u compliant, it's not there yet, this is the dream. What they expect to have happen is your voice connection stays on AT&T's network. Okay. All of the data automatically, and without you even knowing about it, transitions to the wired and wireless network at Starbucks. Okay? And it's called a Hotspot 2.0, and that's the dream. Right? And it's an admirable dream. Mike's saying, hurry up, start it. The hotspot is it's based on MAC address of your device and a registry process. And everybody said the MAC address and registry work fine, and then who's going to manage it and implement it and blah, 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 and that's where it's all bogged down. It's just something to be aware of coming forward. Okay? Like I said, great idea with a lot of implementation issues. So, hopefully, you got something out of this. If there are any questions, concerns, happy to take them. Stunned silence.
So with the real world in a you know warehouse environment, okay, is the 5 gigahertz a practical thing, or do you have to stay in the 2.4 for the greater coverage and the ability to get around through materials better?
2.4, I don't think in an industrial setting is going away anytime soon. I think the 802.11n as it stands right now is very appropriate in that environment. The rest of the world is going to move away from that. I think there's going to be a long tail though. So like I said, if you're not at n now on both sides, that's where you want to be. I'm not sure there's anything compelling for the ordinary business user that's doing business applications and that sort of stuff beyond that anytime soon. If you're talking about doing wireless video and you know, two volumes of data, then all of a sudden it doesn't matter. But I think end-to-end, if you can get there, that's what we do all the time. Yes?
We didn't do all the design for low bandwidth and all of this. We're finding that we really need to make that hyper-personal data set back and forth to the website. And it's a lot nicer for the website. The customers don't think they need it, they don't pay for it, they can't get it.
Yeah.
And so now we're trying to go patient on life for other people.
You still have, depending, you can still write a really lousy HTML5 application as well, right? So be careful with that. It's the data access piece that you need to scale down. Right? So, that's the, in different technology, that's the poster child for thinning out, only getting what you need, not, and it's a design choice. I mean, it's early on, it's not something you add later on. Because retrofitting is a huge pain.
And of course, as ABL programmers, we're more concentrated on getting features in than getting code for it.
I'm hearing you. I know.
I'm trying to figure out what a data set actually is to help the world.
Well, it's turned into, instead of just dealing with blocking and block access, what's a record block, except what's block access? We now need to deal with, well, what's the data set, how big is it?
Yeah.
And going back to old school, you know, technology, if you want to build, does this fit in the world that we live in?
Well, you're back setting more of a, no, you're not getting a data set. Here's the data you need to build a screen.
Right. Just what you need.
You're going to the stuff we did back in the mid-80s.
Yes. If I can ask everybody, right, fill up one of the drawing things.
Yep.
That's also my feedback on, this is the first time I've done this level of detail. So if you could, any feedback would be very helpful. Thank you.